Hi everyone, welcome to BiComs Podcast. This is Roni Gazit and I'm delighted to be joined by Anshel Pfeffer here in London. Anshel is a columnist with Haaretz and also the author of a pretty comprehensive biography about Bibi, the turbulent life and times of Benjamin Netanyahu. So thank you so much for joining today, Anshel.
Thank you for having me, Roni.
And we are sitting here just about 36 hours away from the deadline for Israel to get a governing coalition. So can you talk to us a little bit about how we got to where we are and what you see happening in 36 hours?
Well, at this point, it's pretty clear that there's not going to be a major surprise, it's pretty clear that there's not going to be a coalition by Wednesday at midnight. None of the parties seem to be seriously trying to form a government. They all seem to be resigned to having another election, a third consecutive election on March the 2nd next year, less than 3 months from now. That's pretty much the consensus right now. How did we get here? Well, how did we have a second election as well? There's no majority for either of the main candidates, neither for Benny Gantz or for Benjamin Netanyahu. They've both failed. They both had a number of chances to form a government after the past two elections. They both failed to gain a coalition. Netanyahu's failure is easily attributed to Avigdor Lieberman refusing to join the coalition of right-wing and religious parties. If Lieberman had relented, then Netanyahu would have had his majority. However, Lieberman decided that he can't sit anymore with the ultra-Orthodox parties, who were once very close allies of his, but now he's decided that Israel needs a secular national unity government and therefore he can't join Netanyahu's coalition. And at the same time, even though together with Lieberman there's a majority of Knesset members who don't want a narrow government led by Netanyahu, they can't somehow come together and build a coalition because the disparity between their views from the Arab-dominated joint list to Lieberman's nationalist Israel Beiteinu is much too wide to form a coalition from all those different parties together. So we are now by now almost a year of political deadlock in Israel. It's going to continue at least until March 2020.
So do you think that there are any factors that will have an impact on that election and that will prevent, for instance, going to a fourth election? I mean, what has happened significantly between September, between now, that might lead to a situation in March where we're not facing a political deadlock?
Well, that's a very good question because so far the polls, and we haven't yet, the next election campaign has yet to start in earnest, so the polls may change. But the most recent polls in the last few days show that the results are very similar to what we saw on September the 17th in the second election, and that's not that different from what we saw in April in the first election. So everything indicates a political deadlock continuing also after the election in March. That said, things change over 3 months, and there's one major thing which has happened last month. Netanyahu has been indicted for one count of bribery and three of fraud. So that may shift some voters, and there may be some voters who will decide enough is enough, and therefore they will move to either side. Perhaps they'll say that we have to strengthen Netanyahu because he's the only viable prime minister, or maybe some of the people who voted for pro-Netanyahu parties will think that's enough and we should move to Gantz's blue and white or to Lieberman, and perhaps there'll be more of a majority, more of a stable majority for a non-Netanyahu coalition. The other thing which may change, though I wouldn't say there's much chance of that happening, is that we'll probably have a leadership primary within Likud, which is being forced by Netanyahu's rival within Likud, Gideon Saar. Most Likudniks and most observers of that party don't think that Saar has got a big chance of beating Netanyahu in the leadership election, but it's a possibility, and it may serve. And even if Netanyahu wins, the margin will be important for his standing within Likud. So if Saar gets anything over 35%, so more than a third of the vote, I think that will significantly weaken Netanyahu's standing.
And now, speaking of leadership changes within a party, we saw yesterday, I believe, the announcement that Lapid was going to give up the rotating premiership with Gantz in terms of Blue and White's leadership. Do you think that might have any impact in terms of votes for that party?
Well, it was certainly felt by many people, both within Blue and White and outside the party, that this unclear situation in Blue and White's leadership with Benny Gantz as the leader, but also sort of a co-leader in Yair Lapid, who was going to receive, assuming that if they had won, was going to receive the second half or the second part of the premiership, it was seen as weakening Blue and White, as sort of a sign that the party is not fully united behind Gantz, and that perhaps not everybody sees Gantz as the best possible candidate. Why have a second candidate? And the other thing is that Lapid is very unpopular in many parts of Israeli society, obviously with the religious community, but not only. So that was seen as also an act of weakness by Gantz. Why allow someone else to have the second part of the premiership, and of all people, Yair Lapid, who he has his base of supporters, but it's beyond his own base of supporters. He said not very popular. So the fact that Lapid has now relinquished that, and there seems to have been behind the scenes some kind of pressure on Lapid to do that, and some people are assuming that Gantz had to promise him that he's not going to go into a coalition with Netanyahu in return for his relinquishing the rotation. But whatever the reasons are, that will probably help Gantz in some way. But I don't think it's going to make a massive change, because I don't think anybody really assumed that Lapid was ever going to be in a position to get that rotation. So in many ways, Lapid has given up something which he never had and probably never would have.
Right. So just circling back to the Attorney General's announcement to indict Netanyahu, and with all your knowledge of Netanyahu and the Prime Minister, can you talk to us just a little bit how, you know, Bibi has been able to navigate this whole thing? One would think that this might destroy him and in his position as Prime Minister, but we've now been through two elections with him and we're heading towards a third. So can you tell us a little bit about how you see him navigating this situation, what we might expect going forward?
Well, let's look first of all backwards. I mean, it's pretty incredible that for a year Netanyahu has now been interim Prime Minister. In this period, he has failed to win two elections. I wouldn't say he lost them, but two elections certainly he hasn't won. He hasn't emerged from these elections with the majority. And in this time, we've had all the legal developments. We had back in February the announcement by the Attorney General that he's planning to indict Netanyahu. In the interim, we had the pre-trial hearings, which failed, and Netanyahu's lawyers failed to budge the Attorney General in any way. And now we have the official and final, what was probably the final indictment of Netanyahu, which still has to be filed with court, because Netanyahu can still ask for immunity. But we've had all this happening over the past year, and Netanyahu is still there, and now he's guaranteed of being in office for at least another 3 more months, because by law he can't be moved until there is an alternative government. Until another prime minister comes along with a majority, Netanyahu is still the prime minister. And despite being indicted, the Attorney General also said that there's no reason for him not to remain prime minister until there are further developments in his case. So what Netanyahu has done is he's basically created a situation where no one else can form a government. He's threatened the parties around him that, you know, if Gantz becomes prime minister, who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be a terrible thing. Gantz is this awful left winger, and he's got all these anti-religious people like Lapid around him. Now, that's obviously hugely exaggerated, but this has helped to keep the coalition of 55 MKs, which is a minority coalition, but it still is a cohesive bloc together. Likud, with the exception of Gideon Saar, has stood behind him, and Netanyahu has made it very clear that anybody who even whispers any kind of ideas of replacing him will immediately be branded as a terrible leftist traitor and backstabber. And with the exception of Saar, none of the senior Likud leaders, and many of whom probably would want to be running to replace him, have dared to break cover. And there's been also very much this browbeating or even intimidation of the legal establishment, especially the Attorney General, saying, you know, don't you dare say that Netanyahu can't remain Prime Minister until the very last moment when he's convicted and exhausted all his avenues of appeal. Assuming that happens, until then, he's the people's choice and therefore he has to remain president. That's just, he's not the people's choice. The people have not voted for Netanyahu. A majority of voters in September voted for parties which quite clearly were not supporting Netanyahu. But Netanyahu has created this narrative whereby his leadership has to remain until God knows when. And this is, it's had its effect on the legal establishment. And another aspect that we shouldn't be forgetting is that Netanyahu has been using this sort of his hostility or even incitement towards Arab-Israeli politicians and citizens, saying that there's no way that they should ever be allowed to be part of a government. And this has also blocked another way of Gantz of creating a minority government with the backing of the Arab-dominated joint list. So all these things have kept him in power despite his what would seem to be a very precarious position.
So we've talked about Gantz, we've talked about Netanyahu, two of the biggest players in the last two election cycles, but we haven't really delved into the role that Lieberman has played, and who's oftentimes been referred to as the kingmaker. How do you see him navigating an upcoming election cycle? Will he be as successful, or is his position diminished because he's essentially refused to sit in either, you know, a left government or a right government? And how do his supporters see him going into what might be a third election in March?
So it's true that Lieberman was potentially, or you could argue still is until Wednesday night, Wednesday midnight, potentially the kingmaker, but he emerged from the election in September without really any good options, because he could go and give, you know, he could go back on what he said and rejoin Netanyahu and get almost any position that he would have desired in the Netanyahu government, and he had the votes to do that. He could have given Benny Gantz a government, but either way, he would be both reneging on many of his previous commitments, and also he would probably fall out with many of his voters if he'd go and sit with the ultra-Orthodox parties, all the voters who voted for him in September, because they thought that he was the key to having a secular government and a non-Netanyahu government. And then all his many right-wing voters who, if he would have joined a government with a joint list, they would have been angry at him for that. And at the same time, he's now being blamed by many people as being the reason why there isn't a third election. So that was also a very bad option for him. The only good option for him, a national unity government, which is what he wanted, which he tried to force both Netanyahu and Gantz to do, has failed, and he's not emerging as a very powerful figure now. Rewind back to May, when he was the main player there who would prevent Netanyahu from forming a government back in May. He was seen then as, like you said, as the kingmaker and the man who holds all the cards and the man who's got all the power. Now he's been shown to be much less powerful than thought, and that could damage him in the upcoming election.
So, assuming nothing drastic happens in the next 36 hours when we're heading towards a March election, what do you think, you know, maybe we can end on this, there are two or three big things we should look out for in the Israeli domestic political scene leading up to the election?
Well, there's one decision that the Attorney General will have to make, or he'll have to announce what his legal view is, and that he's already said that Netanyahu can remain Prime Minister in his current capacity as interim Prime Minister despite the indictment. What he hasn't said is whether Netanyahu can once again receive a mandate to form a government, and that's a very grey area of the law currently, because the law says the Prime Minister only has to resign if he's convicted. However, there's nothing about whether being indicted disqualifies a candidate from receiving the mandate. So there's conceivably a view, which some people say that is the correct interpretation of the law, that Netanyahu can remain Prime Minister, but he can't be reappointed. He can't he can't get the mandate from the president, and therefore he can't form a new government. So that would basically mean that when this election is over and the parties once again engage in the horse trading of forming a coalition, Netanyahu cannot be one of the candidates. Now, if Mandelblit makes that call and says that Netanyahu can't, that will be earth shattering. And whatever he decides will probably be challenged in the High Court. So that will be one important development that we can expect in the next few weeks. The other important development we already mentioned is the Likud primaries. Like I said, Netanyahu will probably win, but it's still an important event. And the third is the election itself. Elections are always interesting events where anything can happen. One of the things that could change in this election, besides voters moving from either side, is that we could see once again parties splitting or coalescing. Will Democratic Union, which is Meretz with various other partners, will it stick together? Will they perhaps join Labour Gesher? Would Labour Gesher stay together? And the same thing happening on the right. Will Naftali Bennett's right-wing party, which has already split from Jewish Home, will they go back again in running together, or will they stay apart? And then we have the question, if parties don't merge, will they cross the threshold again? That could make a major change in the next election. And then we'll have all the other regular questions of election. Turnout, will people come and vote for a third consecutive election? What will the turnout be in the Arab sector, etc., etc.? So all those questions, which we have every election, will come back into play again. So despite the polls now seeming pretty static, it's much too early to predict. Netanyahu could somehow regain power or hit the trend that we're seeing now, when Netanyahu is losing in every election some of his power. Well, could continue, and it'll be further diminished. And maybe in the end it'll be the electorate which will turn Netanyahu out and not his own legal issues.
Well, thank you so much for your insight on this. And I have no doubt we will have you back on for the podcast sometime ahead of the election. So thanks for joining.
Thank you, Ronnie, for having me.